John, you good?
I'm good. Let's roll, baby.
Ladies and gentlemen, leaders and fighters for freedom and liberty and the American dream, the best is yet to come.
All right. Welcome back, folks, to the Building Podcast. With me, as ever, is John Wall, live from his basement in DeKalb, Sycamore, Illinois. Hi, John.
Hey, buddy.
How you doing?
Wonderful. How are you?
Just peachy. And our special guest today is a gentleman by the name of Dave Waitman. Hi, Dave.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Look at that enthusiasm. That's what we like. Dave joins us hot on the heels of a podcast that he hosts called The Business of Fun, in which he spoke to our very good friend, Ali Crawley, who was visiting with us just last week. We took him out and wined him and dined him in Sycamore, Illinois, which was very nice. Hi, Ali, if you're listening. But Dave, thank you for joining us. We got you on because, the Business of Fun podcast and also the Substack you run, which is called, Hugh Dave?
Talking Tickets.
Talking Tickets, there you go. Such a niche. Who knew when you were growing up, right, that you'd be able to do that? A, create a thing on the internet, and be just on tickets. But congratulations on doing it. If you're not listening to the podcast, if you're not listening, subscribe to Dave's Substack, you should be. Dave is one of the best minds I have found on ticketing and that thing, he said, gesturing wildly. But Dave, we will get there first. First off, give us the elevator pitch on the life and times of Dave Waitman, please.
So elevator pitch, my lord. You should have prepared me for that. I will give you less than 90-second view, or I'll give you the shortest possible one. So I have my own little consulting business that you can find at davewaitman.com. And I focus on strategy and really strategy around how you create and capture new profitable opportunities. Over the years, a lot of that work was with sports and entertainment. So I was one of the people who helped bring Yellowtail Line, American football, to help, you know, really launch brand into the big stores. And I think the big thing was guided by Costco. I helped American Express and their concierge partner create a global distribution network so that their Centurion card members, the Black Card, could get tickets anywhere in the world. I helped start open the Experience Music Project. So I worked for Paul Allen, who helped found Microsoft. After a little while, I became completely unemployable. So then I became a consultant because I needed something to do because there was no way I was really going to hire me because I was a blowhard a little bit because I had done all these crazy things. As far as these things go, though, I'm really involved in soccer. I'm the vice chair of the board of the DC Soccer Club, which is the largest youth organization in District of Columbia. Helps over 7,000 to 8,000 kids, boys and girls, throughout the District of Columbia each year. Learn the game of soccer, play the game of soccer. It's one of the largest in the region. So what you're doing in DeKalb County is something that's really like speaks to me because I didn't find out about soccer until my son started playing. He was born in 2010, so probably around 2013, 2014, he took his first lesson. And he was bulldozing kids. My wife was mortified, and his coach told him, no, it's a contact sport. So that's like the really, really like the high level thing. We can get into whatever you want, but I focus on growth and helping people like find opportunities, capture them, and make some money off of them.
For sure.
But you need money to keep going.
Absolutely. That's one of our ethoses is like, we don't make decisions that that benefit us today. We make decisions that benefit us this time next year and 5 years down the line, right? Everything's got to be about ensuring our continued existence. There's no point in winning stuff if we're not here to shout about the fact that we want stuff. So, the youth club and stuff we can absolutely dig into, but I think where we first wanted to dig in with all of this is like, how do you establish the value of your quote product, right? Whether you are just a soccer club and just rolling a ball out and playing a game for 90 minutes and going home, or whether you're doing a whole load of fun festivities around it from, 2 hours before and tailgating and everything else. How do you gauge what your community will swallow?
It's an interesting question because there is a thing. Well, start with, there's two ways of thinking about value. And it's the tangible value, which is like the real, right? The things you can measure, the things you can touch and feel and hold. And that's like the seat at the stadium, the ticket, all that stuff. The more interesting thing for what you're doing and a lot of stuff that I end up doing is the intangible stuff, which you can't measure. It's the emotion, right? It's the time with your family and your friends. It's that excitement that you know you're going to go to the game, you're going to go to a match on the weekend, right? All those things. And what you find if you work on this stuff a lot, is that the intangible stuff means more than the physical stuff. The physical stuff is a lot of time easy. It's a commodity. So what you have to do is you have to focus on your brand, because a lot of times what happens is, especially if you're in a smaller team or a minor league, or it really just, this doesn't matter. It works everywhere and it matters everywhere, which is you neglect your brand because you think that like these tangible things are going to bring you through. Like people are just buying a ticket to a game, but really they're buying all the stuff, right? There it is. We talked about the business on podcast at the start. There was a really great conversation. If you go back, Colby doesn't work for the Whitecaps anymore. He works for Major League Lacrosse, but he's still in sport. Colby Fackler was talking about a conversation he had with a season ticket holder for the Whitecaps. And I was a gentleman who probably is mid-40s, so about my age now. And his daughter, teenage daughter, 14 or 15 at the time. And they had they'd go to all the Whitecaps games together. And he talked about with this person, about this man, about why he kept buying the tickets. Why did he keep going to the Whitecaps games? And he goes, well, where else am I going to be able to spend this consistent time with my daughter, right? We go to dinner beforehand, go to the match. I can have conversations whether she expects to go, right? I expect to go. It's our thing. And it's all these emotions are tied up into it. I think you focus on those emotions, you start to infuse value into your product and service. So I think there's a marketing concept called the value ladder, and you want to go as high up the value ladder as you can, which is to the point where you capture the emotions, you capture those intangible values, you capture all those things that can't be measured but matter, that move people.
So is that almost a gut call, though? Like, there's clearly not a playbook, right? But is there,
I would never say it was a gut thing, because so if we go a little bit further, how do we figure out what moves people? Well, it's a simple question for me to tell you what it is, and it's a complex question for you to figure out. It's a simple question is you do research. The complexity of it is that, like, no matter what market is, no matter what sport it is, no matter what kind of event it is you're selling, it's going to be unique. It's going to be different because everybody feels a little bit different, right? Every market is unique. Every event is unique. I have a friend. God bless him is what I'll say, because I try to teach him this all the time, and then he teaches college students. And they go, you can't compare the tickets to the sports to a ticket to the opera. They aren't the same thing. They're not in the same competitor set. So trying to set your prices against that, trying to express your value against that, it's not relevant. He tries to make it relevant, but it doesn't. So I'm making the point at the expense of my unnamed friend, because I want you to understand that your value is unique. What people are going to buy from you, what they find value in from you is unique. And the only way you can know that for certain is to talk to people. Now, there are a couple different ways that you can do that. I like to start small. Small usually in this case means cheap, which is very, very good as well. But having conversations with people, just talking to people, right? Maybe then you talk to three or four people, you start to get a little bit of consistency in the answers, right? You can start to see a pattern for what people want. And so then you go, great. And maybe what you do is you grab a little focus group, right? Two or three people, four people before a match. You buy them hot dogs and beers before the game. And say, let me run these two or three ideas by you real quick. You know, you comp their tickets or something, whatever, you know, something simple. And you go, okay, so then they'll tell you yes or no. That starts to make sense. And then from there, you can maybe survey your whole audience. I mean, you got to get a feel. And for a club your size, none of it's going to cost you a lot of money. Probably the most expensive thing would be the beers and the hot dogs. But the thing is that you'll learn and you'll see. And that works for everybody. And once you start to get like a holistic, like market-wide thing, I'm going to give you another free idea that'll help tremendously, which is use secondary market research, which is the internet. You can go on Google. I use DuckDuckGo because of privacy concerns, because my wife is an antitrust attorney who told me I should probably worry about my data a little more. And so I said, okay, I'll do that. And so I used DuckDuckGo. So whatever search can you use, and then type in what you're looking for. And you'll be amazed at how much great research is on the internet for free. And you can use that to really, really dig in and find stuff. And then the last phase, you can do market research surveys, but you might not need to until you get to like your club. It's like a big size, many, many thousands of people are members, and you know, you're selling out your stadium and things like that. Then maybe you need to do that. Those first couple ones, you can do, they don't take a lot of time, and you'll be surprised what you learn.
It's all of these things is basically just comes down to talking to people, doesn't it? Rather than believing your own self.
That's a big point. It's like your assumptions are dangerous.
Yeah.
Like I tell people all the time, we'll get to it now. I tell people I'm a moron. I don't know a fucking thing. You said I could cuss, right?
Yeah.
You said
you like now. Yeah. Yes, you got it. Yes. I would love you to cuss.
I tell people I don't know a fucking thing about anything, right? But I know how to figure it out. And that's because I'm smart enough to know that I don't know anything. So I go and talk to people. And that's the key. You have to have a little bit of like humility to be able to say, I don't know, but I'm willing to talk to people and figure out the answer.
Yeah. All of it, again, it's just talking to people. It's communication every time, isn't it? I've been working with John long enough to know when he's thinking of things and he's about to unveil some sort of thought fart. So good luck with this, but John's got ideas and John's about to ask you a question. Well, in about 10 minutes, John will ask you a question. Until then, he'll just hear his voice.
Thanks. That was the best introduction I've ever gotten, Nick. So I'm curious, going back to the intangible, the emotion, the all that, how do you bottle up what it may in fact exist, right? And with a young club like us, we don't have generations of, my grandfather used to bring me to games in the summer. We don't have that yet, but... Yeah. We do have the people that tell us what a great experience it is. How does Nick, as the marketing guy and with a content team, do we like sort of show people that intangible thing, or is that even possible to show them?
So if one of the part of it, okay, no, I have an answer. Don't worry, John. I got you. I mean, you're probably not, because in theory, I'm an expert. So I'm going to do my best here. All kidding aside. So the first thing is like, how do you bottle it up? And I would say the first thing you need to know is like, how are you going to show up in the market, right? And I teach, when I go and teach MBA students and I teach classes about brand management, I tell them the three questions that I learned about brand management that I try to teach them, which is like, who are you targeting? What's your position? And how are you showing up in the market, right? So you need to know who that customer is, right? And then you want to know, like, what do you want the club to be, which kind of ties it, which is your position. And then how do you show up, which ties to your brand codes. And so part of that brand, those brand codes are the symbols. And those symbols you can use to show up and express what you want people to feel, right? So if you want your club to feel warm and friendly and inviting, then that should come through in the way that you express things in your social media. You know, there is a thing I don't know how long it will be before this goes out, but a couple of days ago, there's a guy called Josh Spector who has a newsletter, and he shared his newsletter about how you don't create a voice, you discover it, you uncover it. And I was like, I can be slightly snarky at this point a little bit, but it's smart and smart ass at the same time, I think I go for it. But that's like sort of the thing with how your tangibles are going to. You have to know who you are, right? You have to know what you want to be like. What does success look like for you? How do you want to come across to people? And then you infuse that through all of these, the codes that you use. And those codes are symbols, right? So you have a great logo right behind Nick's head on the screen right now, right? And that should be on everything, right? And that should symbolize, right? I'm assuming that sort of the thing is like reflects your community is a little bit of a farming and agricultural community that's meant to embrace that, right? So then that's part of the thing, right? Your community club. So then probably a lot of the stuff you're going to show is going to be around like the way that kind of familial local community feel, right? And that'll show up and should come through in your marketing materials. It's a little bit of a dance, right? It's not like you it's kind of like if somebody tells you they're smart, like, John, dude, I'm a totally really smart dude, man. You got to trust me on this. No way believes you. It's the same thing, like, we're warm and inviting, bro. No way it's going to buy that. But if you show that, but if you show examples of it, right? If you can kind of, you infuse it in the work you're doing, then it starts to come through. Because the one thing is like, it has to be intentional. It has to be consistent.
So and that makes sense. The thing that it's funny that we're talking ticketing, because just, I don't know, a month ago, I asked the staff, hey, do we need to adjust, or should we look at adjusting tickets? And every business model is different with what does your ticket revenue actually do for your bottom line? Is it we absolutely want to charge because we understand the value of what we're putting together and there's value to it. But we're trying to figure out, I think, Nick, this, you'll agree with this. We want to be worth we want to be worth $100 a ticket, but not have to charge it. It'll be run a sustainable business. But we want the fun to be like Taylor Swift concert or whatever, you know? And then there's this in between of, well, we want it to be affordable. We need it to be affordable, but we don't want to undervalue, but we also have increasing costs on the other side that we want to help cover. And then if we have, you know, as I'm looking at a budget, I'm looking at, well, do we spend a little bit more on match day, quote unquote, entertainment, face painters and wellness houses and all that stuff? Do we spend more on that this year to then hope people have a better time to then next year, they'll go, wow, that was so much fun. And we grew and attendance went up, and it's just so many different ways to look at it. I'm curious how you, like, again, when we talked a little bit, you know, there's some at our level that charge $10, $15, some that are free. And we're at $7 at the door or $5 through fan base. Shout out to Allie again. $5 in advance, right? So that we can plan and have our staff and sort of know that's what the attendance is going to look like. But that's how we do it. And I think we're kind of right in the middle. But I also think, Nick, you could agree in terms of what happens off the field and the extra entertainment, the DJ and all the stuff, we're worth more than 15. In a real world, dad's taking his family out to a sporting event, whether it's minor league baseball or whatever, we're probably worth 18, 19 bucks a ticket, probably. But I don't know that that's what we're competing with, and that's certainly not our objective. I guess, as Nick said, I ramble on and don't ever ask a question, but like...
Oh, no, you definitely asked a question here. And I'm going to... So let me see if I can sum it up and get it right. So you want to know, how do you make the impression of value equal or greater than what the charge is, so that like it's a no-brainer. I got it. And I'm gonna hold up a chart for you. I'm gonna explain the chart, since I know people won't be able to see it because we're not gonna release a video of this, but it's gonna change, but it'll help. So in the here in the center, I drew this thing. This is really the product. And so the middle, you have the thing about it is the core is the value that you're creating. So that's like, you know, all of the fun stuff, right? So it's like going to the game, hanging out with your friends, whatever motion they get from it. The product itself is going to be the ticket and go into, right? Maybe the website, you know, do the merch, whatever. But the augmented product, that's where you're asking, right? Which is everything. And that's your website, right? So that's a shout out to Allie and Fanbase. The work that they did to help have a really solid digital home. So that people can go to the website, they get to see and experience are better than they do. Maybe even going to the St. Louis Cardinals or Chicago Cubs or the Bite Sox. The augmented things are going to be what happened when they go to the game. Like, what kind of hot dogs are you serving? What kind of beer do you have on tap if they come? What kind of entertainment do you have outside of the match? Like, what goes on before and after? A great resource. This sounds like a commercial for Fanbase and Allie, which it's totally bad, but I mean, he's more than welcome for all the plugs because he does great work and he's a great guy. But a great resource for this was Troy Kirby, who I think you guys are aware of as well, because he did what the heck was the name of the team slipping my name now, but Troy's out in Olympia, and his team, he had a team of similar level, and he did all kinds of these crazy things, and the league thought he was nuts for it. But he had a big, giant, inflatable soccer ball for the kids to chase at halftime on the pitch. He had the face paint. He had a bounce house. He would, like, bring in food trucks. He would do all kinds of great things. Again, and it just elevated the perception of value, because then it's not just a soccer match, right? Like, you're paying $5 to get it. It's an event, right? It's kind of like going to the carnival. So instead of $5, you're probably getting, who knows how, what kind of monetary value you are, but you're getting it where, at a point where you're like, well, whoa, a second, this is great. And I think from the lesson I learned from Troy is that it wasn't just smart to invest in that the long term. It paid off in the short term too. So sometimes elevating the experience and making the experience more valuable in the near term also helps in the long term. And really what probably ends up happening is that you can continue to invest in those the game day, the match day experience, and you'll have a chance to do even more really cool things, but you'll have different and better opportunities come up to you. And so I don't know if I really answered the question about how do you create value to make it $100 while you're selling it for $5, but that is sort of the direction you go. You want to just keep infusing different ways for people to have fun. Because that's the big thing. There's all kinds of, the biggest alternative that you're fighting is probably people watching Netflix or Disney Plus or whatever streaming thing you're doing, or doing nothing at all, right? So you're fighting the status quo. And so what you have to do is make sure that, like, what you're offering is so much fun that you're like, well, this is great. I get to see all of him from the neighborhood, from the community. Kids have fun. Kids run around this library. They can get a great snack. It's, you know, I have a really nice evening.
What do you, I guess this is an opinion thing. What is your position on, like, the lack of value? And I guess what I mean is, we have, has Division I men's and women's soccer on the same, you know, we use their field for the summer. They don't charge admission. And even growing up here, very rarely did I ever think about going to an NIU game, even though the level of soccer is fantastic. But it's a free thing, and then it becomes like, well, if I miss it, I'll catch the next one. No risk, no big deal. And at what point do we think like, well, even at $5, if anything for $5 now is, I mean, that's literally a drink at Dunkin' Donuts. So is it almost undervaluing to not sort of keep up with, I don't want to say inflation, but just like the cost of the type of experience? When does that $5 feel like zero to people? And does it actually work against you that you don't value yourself?
Okay. Yes. That is a really great question. And
thank you. I spent a lot of time knocking that around here just while you were talking. Thank you.
Nick, like, I can't believe it. This is great. How you price your thing is a definite expression of how you, or people perceive it to be a direct expression about how you feel about it. This is why discounts are awful. You know, like, you should never ever, you know, my famous saying is discounts are for dummies. And it's because it signals to your customers, your market, that you don't believe in the value of your product. So the thing is that you can be priced too low, right? And at, you know, maybe five, I don't, you know, again, that's a research thing, right? You can see what people are comparing you to, right? Are they comparing you to going to a movie? And if so, then maybe $5 is too much, or I mean, too little, right? And so then they may be, oh man, maybe it's not as great of a thing. If they're comparing you to even minor league baseball or something, then you go, maybe like $12 to $15, so, you know, might be better. So you have to be careful. You need to manage the perception, because the perception, if you priced yourself too low, is that it's not worth the value. So you definitely have to understand that there's a certain signaling effect that goes into pricing well. Now, how do you price it right? So especially where inflation has become an issue, continues to still be an issue in a lot of ways, because, you know, even though the overall inflation number maybe have come back down to a reasonable thing, I know that its distribution across the economy is uneven, right? And it's like certain things that cost a lot more, and the prices are still going up because they're still hard to come by. No, the first rule is that your profit is not your concern to your customer, and your customer could give a rat's ass about your profit. So you have to keep that in mind. So the best thing you want to do, you can do, is to want to make sure you're priced the right perception. If you want it to say, you know, if you want it to seem like a premium thing, then you got to charge the premium price for it. If you want to make it seem accessible but valuable, then that's a different price decision, right? And if you want some, you know, some different kind of decision, you got to start there by knowing what you're trying to price for, right? If you want to price in a way that like makes it easy for people to say yes, then that's a different thing, right? And it's going to be as simple as like, you know, you could have like, if you're using bleachers and you have like those little like, that don't have backs, and then you have those little seat, the seat backs, you know, you can add those into the price of the ticket, and like those are two different things. So you go, well, you get in, it's $5 for telling you the seat back, and it's $10 with the seat back. The seat back doesn't cost you anything because you're already there. You should be using the field anyway, right? But the perception of value changes. So there, it's a complicated thing that you're doing, and just shifting it a little bit, you play with it, I guess, is the best way of putting it. And there's no one right answer, because again, like the market research, every organization's different. Every answer is going to be a little bit different depending on your market and what your strategy is.
I wonder, I remember we did I think every year, Nick, we've done a postseason survey. We do fan survey, player survey, coaches survey, staff survey. And I remember it was either the first season or the second season, somebody said, I can't believe it's this cheap to come to a game. And we weren't really doing, we wanted to do a lot off the field, but we weren't there yet. But I mean, early on, we were getting feedback that we were cheap. And, you know, I think we've always tried to find that balance of priding ourselves on being the most affordable option, but also, again, kind of being the best thing. One thing we haven't ever tried, I'm curious your thoughts on this. We have season tickets available now, today. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. And those
really
are pay
or even these plugs.
We struggle on getting into sponsoring the podcast. So yeah, this is going to be the first sponsored by Funbikes podcast of this round. So thank you, Ali. Yeah,
yeah. But that is our, you know, the season ticket thing is sort of, that's where you get your discount, right? I pledge mm-hmm. to be there at as many games as possible. And one thing, I guess, Nick, we've never really talked about was even pricing a Saturday night game and a Wednesday night game for individual match tickets could be different. I don't know that that's right or wrong. I'm curious, Dave, your thoughts on that. When clubs have Messi coming to town and tickets are $195 or $365 as compared to the, you know, $32 normal ticket, I'm put off as a fan about that a little mm-hmm. bit, especially when it's because of this like, thing. But for us, a Wednesday night game versus a Saturday night game, I could see that maybe that's a hybrid thing, Nick, that we talk about internally is we don't raise the prices of the tickets across the board. Maybe it's too hard in the back end. Probably not. Fan base is so friendly. But like, I'm just curious your thoughts. Does it confuse the fans to have, you know, $6 game, $12 game, $9 game, or is it too complicated to explain the justification for that?
So I don't think it's too complicated. I think it's pretty common now, because if you go to Broadway, right, matinee might be $10 cheaper than an evening. A Saturday night might be $10 more than during the week. That's pretty, customers realize that pretty, they understand that, right? But they, a value judgment that they make pretty readily in like a lot of areas of their life. What I think is interesting is what John, you're saying, as a customer, you get a little frustrated. And that's one of the challenges with dynamic pricing. The way that you expressed it doesn't necessarily tick the same boxes at least in the work I've done and the people I've talked to. But where you do, it's like going, oh my God, you know, like it's our biggest rival. And then all of a sudden we can take our tickets from $10 to $50 because it's this one big game. That will feel a little bit icky. And that comes up across the board in research, is that people do feel like you're just treating them like a number on a spreadsheet. And especially for a soccer club, which is built on this relationship, and you're trying to establish yourself in the community and you want to build a long-term relationship, that could be harmful. Doing it the way that you're doing it, where it's like, oh, you know, maybe it's $10 on Wednesday night and $12 on Saturday night. People won't have as much of an issue with that, right? They'll understand they'll be much more likely to understand it and just go, that makes sense, because during the week, you need to like lower price or like create demand or let people in a little more. So it's a little bit easier if you keep it simple. It's where it is can become harmful to your brand, though, is when it becomes really complex and people feel like it's only going up, right? There's never any going down on it, which is what happens a lot of times with something like the Messi situation, which has come back to burn quite a few organizations. Because I mean, I went on Saturday to, and if I had been going for the tickets, I'd have been pissed, because people spent a lot of money on that under the promise of like, you're going to get to see Messi. This might be the only time he's ever in DC. He ain't never playing in DC, because I don't know that he's going to play another season after this, because he's having a hard time making it through one. So
it's just interesting to try to figure out what we are in the market, and we are a relatively smallish community. Yeah. And I'm curious how you evaluate. You said the competition isn't the opera, but out here, it is. I go to local dance competition at the high school or a thing mm-hmm. my daughter was in, and those tickets were $17, and they sold out 4 shows in like 12 minutes. And that was after we parents.
And we're underpriced, John. We got to agree.
I know that, but that's what I'm saying. And that was a once a year thing, but there was 4 shows. That was just one example. But, you know, you don't go to the local theater here and pay less than $25 to go to a show where you're going to sit and you're not going to bring the whole family because I can't afford it. We're going to bring just the one kid because that's the one that'll really like the show the most. Mm-hmm. And so I think, I'm not actually arguing that we should raise our prices. I just feel a little bit that, and we're not for this year. It's all done. I'm just, this is an interesting conversation because I fear we're getting to that point of like, it's so cheap, it's free already. And mm-hmm. and I also know because we...
And that hurts you.
Right. And that's, hurt you. I don't
worse, want, it's worse than being free. Because if you're too cheap, you might as well be free.
Yeah. And that's where I want to, like, because we run our operations, I think, very well. Well, do we need the money? Not today, but in three years' time, looking back, that increase helped keep up with the cost of additional fields and league fees have gone up. But all the stuff that has actually gone up that I could justify in black and white, I think that's an interesting conversation, again, for a small focus group to explain why we are going to raise prices or why we think we want to raise prices. What are your thoughts? And then also because we do try to give back so much to the community and keep the flow. We can add to the match day experience. We can add to the community impact, all those other things we could do. And again, the ticketing revenue is only a small part of it, but it is a part of it nonetheless. So
right. I'm going to let everybody in on another resource that you can find for free. Yeah. I'm like so good. This is like,
you are an expert.
Listen, it's specificity that you paid for. I told you this before we started. The Van Westendorp pricing survey, it's 4 questions. And what you can do is put it in your postseason survey. And you say like, look, at what point does the game seem like good value? At what point does it seem cheap? And like, you don't like it. I'm forgetting the full questions right now. When does it start to feel too expensive? What it does is you plot it. It gives you like a little hole and a little bubble, and you get a feel for what really like your pricing should be. And you'll get an idea. Combine that with a little bit of market research around what are people picking, what are people doing instead of coming to your matches, right? And you'll get an idea of, well, okay, so people are going to the dance competition, they're going to the theater, they're going to minor league baseball, they're going to the movies, or they're having barbecues with their friends. So now I have an idea of how to put this into context. So I can position myself effectively versus like, why do you want to go to sit? Why do you want to go see the opera when you can come see some soccer? I mean, come on. You don't have to get dressed up. You can sit outside and drink beer, right? You know, whatever the positioning might be. You don't want to go see this high school dance thing. You've already sat through 12 of them because your daughter's in dance instances too. Come to the soccer. So, you need to know those alternatives. And that's why it's important, like I was saying earlier, to listen to people. And that those two pieces of data will give you a lot of information to tell you, A, are you priced too low? And if you're priced too low, is probably having that impact of people who just aren't putting the value in it because they don't feel like you use that, right? Because again, if it seems too cheap, it might as well be free. And if, you know, so you got to move it so since it does have a certain amount of value and reflects there. And then people will tell you what they're picking you compared to, right? And you because obviously I think the are you charging too much conversation isn't what we would be having right now.
I'm going to let Nick talk because this is what I do too much. I also, an interesting dynamic that we have, and we just literally just released our season ticket memberships, I think yesterday. One thing that we saw last year, ironically, as attendances were up, our season ticket memberships were down quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And that's a whole nother value proposition to figure out. Maybe people just don't like the idea of committing. Even our season ticket's $45. I'd rather just pay as I go the $7 or $5 or whatever and not have that $45 commitment. And I think that's a hard thing at that price point for us to go, oh, well, you get a scarf and a t-shirt and a hat and what? Now we spent the $45 anyway, and we didn't necessarily guarantee that they're going to come to games. They're just doing it probably to help us because they believe in the club. And they're not so worried. So that's like the whole membership thing is another interesting thing. Maybe it's a second podcast, to be honest, because interesting trend.
Thing you can still ask people. I mean, again, this is part of the things you want to know about, right? Across the board, season tickets have become a tougher sell, no matter what it is. I think, though, if your season tickets are $45 and you position the season ticket as like a investment in the long-term sustainability of the club, then that probably gives you a better chance of selling those season tickets. Knowing that you're drawing $450 a match right now, you probably still have room in your seating bowl to fill more people. You know, so in the short term, right, getting people to pledge their support is probably great because then it gives them access to make sure the team's still around, you can create all these kind of like interesting things to give people value for that, right? Because maybe what it is instead of a scarf and a hat and a t-shirt, you come up with like more experiential things that'll have meaning to people, right? It's maybe something as simple as like one of your coaches does a clinic, like, you know, a 2-hour clinic and teaches adults about the game of soccer, learning things. Maybe it can be a watch party for like a, I don't know if the community has a, or Nick, it sounds like he might have a favorite team that he follows. Maybe it's like watch party, you know, like different experiential things that only have access to if you're season ticket holder. And you do spell out these benefits, right? And again, tangible and intangible ones that would get people excited. You could even come up with, again, it's a strategy discussion, but you could create a package that's like a family package. Right. And they could just, instead of like charging by the ticket, it could be $100 for everybody. And then they get access to these things. Right. So there's different ways that you can play with value because what I've learned about touch point is that the touch points go, they start way, way earlier than we imagine. And they go way farther than we know. And that the little stuff matters a whole lot more than the big stuff. And what we, again, this is why I tell people I don't know anything. What we think is going to be valuable typically is not. It's not the stuff that matters to people. And the only way we know is by asking.
100%. Why you do what you do and why John started a club is because the things that matter to you two are not the things that matter to the people that don't do what you do and didn't start a club in the local neighborhood, right? It's just different triggers. Thank you for giving me the microphone, John. You can have it back in 2 seconds. I just want to circle back very quickly to something that I picked up on long ago on one of your podcasts, and you mentioned it today, your discounts are for dummies moment. Whilst I agree, and you know, far be it for me to say you're wrong, but I'm curious as to how you said, of course you're not, sir. No, but like, obviously there's nowhere for us to go down from a $5 discount, right? That's just, we've established that. But how do you energize at the beginning, if not an early bird price, right? So if you look at our season tickets, $50, $45 if you buy them now. Our family tickets, $200, $150 if you buy them now. So I think that's still a discount. And I get maybe it's a phraseology thing, but like, if you want the certainty of that money on your balance sheet, how do you give people a kick up the backside without devaluing it through a discount?
Without giving them a kick up the backside. Well, yeah, a lot of it is really was in the answer I just gave John about the way that we position a season ticket, right? And, you know, or what, how we get people to buy it, or the decline of the season ticket. And it seems like adding value, creating, it was positioning and adding an extra value, right? So let's say we limit the season tickets to 100 a year. And what we do is, or actually, let me back it up even. I worked on a music festival in Miami, and an idea that we played with, really what happened was just the world started to fall apart with COVID, so we didn't get to have the festival, is kind of the point. But it was the $1 million ticket. And so the $1 million ticket was like, you were going to get VIP entrance to the thing. We had a seat for you and like your friends right on the stage. Like, so you were right there with Jack White and Chance the Rapper, you know, unlimited food and drink. Penthouse at like our partner hotel, the Clevelander. I forget what was all in. It was on the stuff. It was like really going to be fun. And I never expected anybody to buy it, but I expected to be able to get a lot of mileage selling it, using it as a tool of promotion for people. If somebody bought it, that would have been amazing. This would be so fun to put together the whole thing. But you could do something similar. You keep that idea in mind as you're creating the thing, right? You put a limit on the number of season tickets. You put a limit on levels, right? The first 20 people are going to get, you know, maybe like your coach goes and does a clinic for one of the first 20 will draw two names out of the hat. You can send them to like your kid's classroom or something, right? Or you can bring the coach to work and he'll take your job with you and he'll do clinics for your coworkers or something like that, right? And then the next 20, it's another special thing that goes on. It's like a little bit less value in each level. So you just like create these special events, these experiences that will have value to people. And again, I'm just laying on things that don't necessarily cost you a lot of money or anything. Yeah. That could be, but you can do whatever you want, because it could also be something your sponsors want to be part of, right? Because I don't even know who any of your sponsors are. But let's say one of the ones that we're working on with my son's club as a thing for like the parents is we want to find a craft beer partner inside the District of Columbia to create a beer specifically for our soccer club. And like, you know, that could be like one of the things, like first 10 people get to be a part of like helping create club's beer, right? Like the official club beer, right? And it'd be fun for like the brewer. It'd be fun for all the people. It might not cheese the beer at all, but it's like, it seems like a lot of fun and a lot of value. And right, for $50 or $100 that we're charging for a season ticket, it's good value for money for people, right? Like, I like to use incentives as opposed to like discounts. I'm always like, well, how can I create the value that's going, and you know, use a combination of value and time and like, you know, scarcity to manipulate that feeling.
So that's interesting. So realistically, and I'm just plucking numbers out of the air, but you've set a base price of $100, right? And rather than say, okay, for 2 weeks, it's going to be $50, you say, for 2 weeks, we're going to make it worth $150, but not an actual physical value. We're just going to, so we, if the change of mindset, I'm not thinking about the dollar signs, but thinking about the memory, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a huge thing for a lot of people.
Yeah. You can change, you know, you just make the, you make, it's called price rating.
Yeah.
So you compare the price that you're charging to other things so that you make it seem like no big deal. You go like, well, that's, I mean, you could be like, you go, our season ticket is $50. And if you bought a season ticket to see the college's team, like $150, mm-hmm. you know, or something. And I might not go there just because of your partner and everything, but that's the way you can fucking, right? You go, you can come live and like, as opposed to, for the cost of a season ticket, our season ticket cost you 1 month of Netflix or something.
Yeah,
like, yeah, that's
I think
you know. So just so you have like something, you compare it to what you want. And there's tons of ways you can play with it. Like, on, you know, your just base season ticket might be $50. You might be able to keep it. That might be though that point, like John was saying, where it's so cheap it might as well be free.
Mm-hmm.
But let's say we'll use $100. And then, like, you could have a $250 ticket that gets you food for four, three games or something.
Yeah.
Like, so you come in, you get a hot dog, four hot dogs, some popcorn, some soda, and, you know, something else, you know, ice cream cone each game, each match. And you walk in and you do something like that. And again, you've already got the revenue in hand, so you can book it on your books, right? You've got people committed, so you sustaining the business. The perception of value is much higher, right? So, you know, it's a lot of things you're in your faith.
All good.
It's like, I like the idea, Nick, of that same concept and doing a raffle, you know, like, hey, we're going to first 20 whatever family packages, we're going to raffle off and you'll win four replica jerseys. And we'll send, you know, do stuff like that. There's a lot here. Like, you know how we are now. Sorry.
100%.
We're going to go crazy.
Look, but I'm, I mean,
all of those things are definitely should be like on the table. I mean,
yeah.
There's no right or wrong answer.
Something you say as well.
Part of the great fun is like you get to play with it. It's great. It's amazing.
Yeah. We're writing the play. We're writing the playbook as we go. And also, what works for us isn't necessarily by default going to work in DC or Nevada, right? It's just it happens to be
our. That's correct. That's 100% correct. And that's the problem with too many, when you listen to too many of these sports business people talk, is that they want to give you a one size fits all solution. And the reality is that's never going to happen. It's just every market, every team, everything is different, right? And everyone's an outlier. It's what I told a friend of mine who's an executive. At a football team yesterday, I said, the truth is that every one of your markets is an outlier. LA and New York are as different as could be, right? Like, you just because they're so big that that's the only thing they have similar. Other than that, they're
we can take that down to the granular level, and the difference between our crowds on our men's games and our women's games is the women's games tend to be far more player family based, and men's games plots tend to be far more community based. But then the bigger picture is that the attendances at both those games tend to be far more family as a whole based than would be at the hockey game or the baseball game. It's just and then you extrapolate that across the country, it makes no sense to try and template it out. Gentlemen, I'm very
well. This is like, let me jump in here on this women thing, because in one of the things that I have a bug up my ass about, is, you know, the disrespect of like the women's teams compared to the men's teams. And it's partly because of that cookie cutter way that people want to approach selling the sport. And what you found is absolutely right, is that the markets are entirely different. Right. And so that's why it's really important that everybody understand that like, your audience for the men's team is going to be slightly different than your audience for the women's team. So trying to sell women's game the same way you're selling the men's game, it's full there because they're not the same. A really great case study would be to look at the work the Australian Football League Women's League has done. And they went in, they did some research, they drew a picture of the map, they found that the fans of the women's versus the men's entirely different. And now the AFLW is thriving just because they were smart enough to go, there's a different audience for women's sport than there is for men. It doesn't make it bad or good. It just means that like we need to treat them with the respect of the uniqueness that they deserve. So now I'm off my soapbox because I think, and I tell people, don't do it because, you know, it's the right thing to do. Do it because you're greedy and don't want to make money. But, you know, it is the right thing to do because there's like so many, for so long I've seen so many, I've coached boys and girls. And so I've seen the girls not have the same opportunities that the boys have had just because it's, you know, this metal cookie cutter thing is frustrating to me because these girls are like, they've been, some of them have been done really, really cool and great things, and they don't necessarily get the opportunities or the recognition that they deserve.
So you're listening to Woke Pod. This is three middle-aged fathers just shouting at the sky. I'm conscious of time, he said for the third time of asking, and I know, John, you need to make a quick getaway. So I'm going to leave the final questions and closing to you, John. But Dave, from my side, thank you so much. Keep up the good work on whatever it is, all the
way. Well, thank you for having me. That's the most important thing. I really
appreciate it. No, bless you. Thank you for finding the time. This isn't the end of the questions, because like I say, I'm going to give John the last one, but I'm also going to hang up once he's done. So thank you, Dave, and I'll be in touch down the line.
No, to be honest with you, I have a million more ideas, and I could ask. I'll probably have a whole bunch of follow-up email questions, but... No, it's sometimes I think the theme of this podcast with us is trying to help other people start community clubs. as Nick always says, we are not experts. What we've done sometimes has worked and sometimes hasn't, but we've tried things and we hope people can learn. The theme continually has been boots on the ground. You have to talk to people. You have to be active in the community. You have to be, quite honestly, Nick, this is the most we've ever spent thinking about tickets, right? I've asked the question.
Absolutely.
The staff has answered and we move on. And we, like, sometimes you have to kind of get out of the business and think about it in a different way, right? And I think that's being able to speak to somebody who doesn't know shit like you, Dave, has been really helpful in just in framing the thought, you know, like, all right, let me spend an hour actually thinking just about tickets and what we do. That's, you know, I hope this podcast helps a lot of clubs and other sports, whatever. I think there's just sometimes you got to get out of your own head and think about things differently. And so I've enjoyed it quite a bit. I know I subscribe to the newsletter as well. So I'm looking forward to continuing to kind of educate myself. And no further questions. I appreciate your time.
Well, thank you for having me. You know, yeah, let me point everybody to my website. That's DaveWakeman.com. You can email me. It's Dave@DaveWakeman.com. The newsletter is TalkingTickets.substack.com. And the podcast is The Business of Fun, which there's about 200 episodes there with people in strategy and marketing and branding and tickets. For somebody who doesn't know shit, like I said, I would like to remind people that I am an expert in process of figuring out what I don't know. And the one piece of wisdom that I would like to just make sure that I leave with, it's okay to say you don't know and that you need to go find the answer, right? Because the more people ask me questions, they expect me to always have an answer. And they're almost disappointed when I tell them, well, I don't know a fucking thing, right? It's because I am an idiot when it comes to stuff that I don't have to find it out because I'm willing to talk to people. I'm willing to ask stupid questions or just talk to people. And like so often, if you just spend the time to ask people, they will tell you, you know, what they find valuable, what they're comparing you to. They'll tell you all these things. And it'll give you just a leg up on probably almost every other business you're competing with in your community. So thank you again.
Oh, thank you. And the soundbite for this episode will be the guest himself saying, I don't know a fucking thing. So that's great, isn't it? That's a great intro to everyone.
You told me in the email we were setting this up that you were encouraging cussing. So I figured I should definitely give you at least a couple.
God bless you. I'm looking forward to hearing the swearing on your podcast now. Check it out.
I try to keep that to a minimum. It's just, you know, who knows who's listening? I ended up having this like audience of people. I'm like, well, who the hell are these people? How the hell did these people find me?
I have no idea. I don't know how I found you, but I'm glad we found you. And I'm glad to be on the podcast. So
I do a great job of marketing myself for somebody who doesn't know anything.
Hey, it's been a pleasure. We'll catch you again sometime.
All right, take care. Good luck.
Thanks. Yep. Thanks to you.
Bye-bye. Now the time has come for leaving. Fear now we shall return. We were so glad we could make it, but so sad we gotta run. Well, it might be a long time till we raise another glass. You can rest assured that next time we'll have ourselves a laugh. Yeah, we'll have ourselves a laugh. We'll meet again. Don't know where, don't know when. We all had a good time and we're sad to see it end. Good luck be with you. You'll go your way, I'll go mine.
Do you dream of bringing the beautiful game to your hometown? Imagine players dribbling down the field, spectators cheering, families coming together to enjoy America's fastest growing sport. Now imagine you could make it happen. Introducing the Club Startup Pack from Community Soccer Consulting, the step-by-step guide to turn your vision into reality. In the Startup Pack, you'll find everything you need to get your own grassroots soccer club up and running. With clear instructions, practical tips, and all the necessary tools. We've done the hard work so you can focus on bringing soccer to your community. Inside you'll find a plan for establishing nonprofit status so you can fundraise and operate tax-free. detailed budgets so you understand all the costs involved, advice on securing fields, equipment rentals, and more. Volunteer organization, how to recruit, manage, and keep your team engaged. Compliance information, learn what permits and licenses you'll need. Marketing strategies to promote your new club. And more. With Club Startup Pack, you can start your own club. No experience required. All you need is passion. We'll handle the rest. Let your dreams take flight. Bring soccer to your town. Order the Startup Pack now and be ready for your first kickoff next season.